The fifth parak, Mishnah Aleph, is going to introduce to us a new type of vow. Previously, we saw that there were two types of vow. Most prominent on our Masechta is the Erech vow. If A says, I'm going to give the Erech, the value of B, or he can give his own Erech, that is called a vow in Erechin. And we look in the Chumash, and we see based on the gender and the age of the person who he is making the commitment about, the B, that is the amount that A is going to have to pay. That is Erech. We also saw previously that somebody can give not an Erech vow, but a Damim vow, and that means he's going to actually give the value, the actual value, not a set fee as dictated by the Torah, but he's going to have an appraisal done of the B, or himself, if himself is the B, and he's going to give the Damim, which is the actual value of that person on the slave market. Mishnah Aleph introduces a new type of vow that if somebody says, I'm going to give the weight of myself, or the weight of somebody else, then you have to weigh that individual, and he's going to have to give the weight of that individual in some substance that he commits to. For example, I'm going to give the weight in gold of Larry. Larry weighs a certain amount, and you have to give an amount of gold that equals the weight of Larry. So HaOmer, Mishkali Alai, somebody says, my own Mishkal, my weight, I am going to donate my weight in a certain substance, gold, silver, nosa mishkalo, you have to give that amount. In kesef, kesef, if you committed to give kesef, silver, you have to give your own weight in silver. In zahav, zahav, if you said I'm going to give it in gold, you have to give it in gold. And in fact, the Gemara explains, goes into detail on this, that that is if you delineated what material you are going to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. But if you were silent on it, and the Rav, the Bar Tanur rings this down, if you were silent on it, you have the flexibility to give any type of material that is typically weighed in the area that you are in. So if you typically weigh oranges, you can give oranges. If you typically weigh paper clips, you can give it in paper clips because you didn't commit to a certain type of material. Now the Gemara there continues. It actually says this Mishnah is Chasuri Mechsri Vahachitani. We're missing some text here. If the person is a chasha person, a well-off person, or a dignified person, literally a dignified person, then they actually are going to appraise the person based on the ability of his kavod, who his respect, his dignity, and he is going to have to pay accordingly based on the evaluation and the appraisal that is given of him. So if they appraise that he's going to have to give in gold because he's a very dignified person, then he's going to have to give in gold. Even if he didn't say he's going to give it in gold, he was silent on it. Nonetheless, we are going to appraise, and it will be based on his kavod. And accordingly, based on that, to buttress that, we have a Maisa Be'ima Shel Yirmatya. This the mother of Yirmatya, she was a very wealthy woman, a very wealthy family, and she said, Shamra Mishkal Biti Alai, this mother said, I am going to give the value of my daughter, the weight of my daughter, I am going to commit to give to her. The daughter was named Yirmatya, mother saying, I'm going to give her weight. And she did not say in what material, but also Yerushalayim, and she brought her daughter up to Yerushalayim, Shkalua, and they weighed her in Nasta Mishkalazav, and because she didn't say the amount of the material that she would give the weight in, and they said this is a very, very respectable lady, wealthy lady, the requirement was that she has to give the weight in gold. The next type of vow is actually the same type of vow, but with a little bit of a twist. Instead of saying, I'm going to give my mishkal, I'm going to give my weight or somebody else's weight, the entire body, the commitment is mishkal yadi alai, I'm going to give the value of my arm. And the question is, how do you decipher the weight of my arm? Excuse me, how do you decipher the weight of somebody's arm? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, what you have to do is, I'll say it outside first, you have to fill a bucket with water, for example, stick your arm in up until the elbow, because that's what the yad is. The yad is up until the elbow. You'll displace water, and then you will fill up with the meat. It's, the example is of a donkey meat. And you're actually going to weigh the donkey meat, and you're going to fill it up until the bucket is now full. So what we're doing is we're displacing water. That is, we're displacing the volume of water that my arm is. We're going to replace it with the same volume of donkey meat. Donkey meat we can weigh. We can't weigh somebody's arm when it's attached. It's either going to be he's going to push down too much, or it's going to be too light. He's going to support it. So this is what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mimalei Chavis Mayim. What you have to do is you have to fill a bucket of water. Machnisad Marpeko, and you're going to fit your arm. You're going to put your arm down up until the elbow. elbow, displace the water. And what you want to do is v'sholkel besar chamor v'gidin v'atzamot. You want to weigh the meat and the sinews and the bones of a donkey. V'nosin l'solchad sh'tismalen. You want to fill it in up until it's full. And when you know you have the same volume of donkey meat to your arm, you're going to take that donkey meat and you're going to weigh it. And you're going to give the value of the substance of the material that you committed to give it. And if you were silent on it, we will revert back to Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah, that we said that you can choose your substance unless you're a dignified person, and then it's going to be appraised based on your kavod. Continuing, Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi has a problem with this methodology. That doesn't make sense, because you are using this donkey meat and these donkey organs as a proxy for the arm of the person, and you can't do that because it may not have the same amount of meat and bone and bone. It may have different percentages, which is going to have different weights in it. So you can't use a donkey for a proxy for a person. What you have to simply do is you simply have to estimate how much does a person's arm appear to weigh. And based on that, what you're going to do is you are going to have to give that weight of the substance of the material that you committed to give. So we're just going to estimate, eyeball it the best we can, and the person is going to have to give the material that he committed to give the same weight of his arm based on our estimation. Mishnah Beis and the next two Mishnahs thereafter are going to compare the first two types of commitments that we've talked about, the Erech commitment and the Neder, based on Damim, actual value commitment. So Mishnah Beis says as follows: if somebody says Demei Yadi Alai, instead of saying the Damim, the value of somebody or myself, the entire being, I'm going to pay to the Beis HaMikdash, he says the value, the Damim, of my arm, I am going to pay to the Beis HaMikdash. So how do we appraise the actual value of somebody's arm? So the Mishnah tells us, Shami no so, we are going to give an appraisal of this individual. Kama hu shava biyad, kama hu shava b'liyad. Literally, we're going to say how much is he worth with an arm and how much is he worth without the arm. But the Gemara explains what this means is, we are going to look at the purchase of a slave. And if somebody A is selling a slave to B, if you sell the entire slave, the use of the entire slave, then you're going to have a higher value. If A sells to B the entire slave, but he retains the ownership of one of the arms, such that the purchaser is not permitted to use that arm, that is going to be a lower value. So it's going to be the delta, the difference between those two valuations. That is the value of the arm. And that is when somebody says, Demei Yadi Alai, when somebody says, I am going to pay the damim, the value of my arm, he's going to have to pay that value that we just discussed. Continuing, Zechomer b'nedarim b'arachin. So here is where we see a divergence between how we treat the halachas of nedarim and arachin. When it comes to nedarim, I can say I'm going to give the value of a body part, an arm, a pinky, a leg, and we can ascertain the value of a actual value of a specific body part. However, when it comes to arachin, the Torah says when you give the erechin of someone, we have two factors to look at. And as we've said many times, it's based on the gender and it's based on the age. And that is assuming you're giving the erech of the entire being. You can't have an erech of a part of a person. And accordingly, there is a leniency here when it comes to erechin, that if somebody says, I'm going to give the erech of my arm or my leg or something like that, then there is no erech. The person doesn't have to pay anything. It just doesn't fall on the chart. When we look in the chart of what an erech is, that assumes that you're giving a whole person. We'll qualify this in a little bit. The whole person, and it's simply based on age and gender. So if you say again, you say damim, of this organ, of this limb, there is a commitment to pay and we'll value it. But when it comes to the erech of a limb, there would not be a valuation of that. There's no set fee in the Torah for such a thing, and you wouldn't have to pay at all. Now, the flip side of this is, v'chomer be'erachin mimidarim keitza. There's a time that when it comes to erachin, we're going to be strict, and when it comes to nedarim, the actual value of something, we're going to be lenient. When is that? So if somebody says, ha'omer erachi alai v'meis, if somebody says, I'm going to give my erech, I'm going to give my erechin value, so that's the set fee that is dictated by the Torah. We know what it is immediately. If he says, my erech, we're just going to look at his gender and his age, and he has to give it. He's committed almost immediately. So if he says that and he passes away before paying, so he dies then, because we ascertain the value, yidnu hayorshim, his yorshim are going to have to pay. Those who inherit him, they have his assets, they are going to be obligated to pay. There's a lot of discussion about more details on this in the Gemara, which we won't get into. On the other hand, if somebody says, damai alai, and thereafter, meis, if he says, I'm going to give my valuation, my actual value, and thereafterward he passes away before the actual value is appraised by a basin, because when it comes to damim, we need an appraisal to ascertain his value. But he passed away beforehand, so there was never now a set amount that he has to give. Lo yitnu ayorshim, his descendants have no obligation to pay that damim, shein damim lemesim, because when you would appraise this person, he's dead, and the basin would say he has zero value. So here again, we see a distinction between erachin and damim, but cutting in the opposite direction of the race of the Mishnah. Here we have the situation that we are being machmir when it comes to erachin, because as soon as he says, my erech, we can ascertain what that erech is. But when it comes to damim, we can't immediately ascertain his actual value. We need an appraisal for basin. If he passes away before that appraisal, the Yorshim are not going to have to pay anything. And now we're going to get back into erech. And at the beginning of the Mishnah, we said if you give the erech of a specific limb, that's not going to count. You have to say the erech of a person. We're going to qualify that. What happens if you give the erech of a limb that is necessary for life? So the Mishnah says as follows, Erech Yadiv, Erech Ragli Alai. As we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, when it comes to Erech, if you're giving the Erech of your arm, the Erech of your leg, Lo Amar Klum, there's no commitment here. That's when we said that we are lenient on Erechin relative to Damim. On the other hand, even in the realm of Erechin, Erech Roshiv, Erech Kvedi Alai, if somebody says, I'm going to give the Erech of my head, head is a fundamental, necessary part of somebody's body. You can't live without it. Or if somebody says, I'm going to give the erech, the set fee for my liver. And we know if you looked up in the Torah, you're not going to find an erech for a head or an erech for a liver. Nonetheless, no sin erech klulo. You have to give the erech of the entire being. It's as if the person says, I'm going to give the erech of my entire erech. Why? This is the klal. This is the general principle. Davar shanashama tluyabo nosen erech klulo. If somebody says, I'm going to give the erech of something that his life depends on it, his survival depends on that body part. Our survival depends on our head. Our survival depends on our heart, our liver. If somebody says, I'm going to give the erech of that, we don't ascertain an erech because there's no erech in the Torah, a set fee for that. We are simply obligating ourselves to give the entire fixed fee for the entire erech of that individual as dictated by the Pesukim in the Torah. We just look up, he said, the erech of my heart, the erech of my head, you're paying for the whole thing, and we're just going to look up what's the gender, what's the age, and you're going to give the erech as dictated by the Pesukim in the Torah. Mishnah Dalet is somewhat of a follow-on from Mishnah Beis, where we saw that if somebody makes either an erech vow or a damim vow about himself, he's going to give his own erech or his own damim, his own actual value, and he passes away before actually paying that commitment. This Mishnah is going to be almost the same, but different in the following sense. We have somebody who makes the commitment either erech or damim, but it's not about himself, it's about somebody else. So he's giving the erech or the damim of B, and A passes away before actually paying off that pledge. So Mishnah Dalet says as follows. We're going to start the Mishnah with Erech, when A makes an Erech vow, and then the Sefer will be when he makes a Damim vow. Mishnah Dalet says as follows. Ha'omer Erech Koshel Ploni Alai. A says, I'm going to give the Erech, that set fee dictated by the Torah, that Erech of B, that's my commitment, I'm going to pay it. And Meis HaNoder VeHaNidor, in this situation, both the Noder A and B, the subject of the Erech commitment, they both pass away. Yitnu a Yorshim, the Yorshim, those who inherit hay, have the obligation to pay off the Erech vow. Why is that? Because as soon as A says, I'm giving the Erech of B, we know what the amount is that he has to pay. There happens to be a little bit of a detail here that there's a confirmation of the amount by a coin that's required. It's a technicality. As long as that happened before A passes away, then the Yorshim would be obligated to pay that Erech vow. Damav shel Ploni alai, in the case that A makes a commitment to give the Damim of B, not the Erech, but the Damim, in this situation, Meis Hanoder, if only A passes away, but B did not pass away, so they are able to appraise the actual value. This is Damim, not Erech. They can appraise the actual value of B. Yitnu HaYorshim, the Yorshim would be obligated to pay off that Damim vow that A made, even though A passed away before paying it. On the other hand, if we have the situation that A made a Damim vow, A passed away, but not only A passed away, but also Meis HaNidar, B also passed away. In this situation, because B passed away before the appraisal was done, we don't know how much the Yorshim should have paid or could pay. Accordingly, Lo Yidnu HaYorshim, the Yorshim don't have to pay anything. Why? Because at this point, to do a valuation, Shein Damim LeMeisim, if they did an appraisal now, there is no value to somebody who passed away, so there's no obligation on the Yorshim to pay off that Damim vow. Mishnah Gimel continues to compare if somebody makes an Erech vow and a Damim vow. The Mishnah says as follows, Chetzi Erechi Alai. If somebody says, I'm going to give half of my Erech. So if we have, for example, somebody who's between 20 and 60 years old, a male, and he says, I am going to give my Erech, I'm going to give my value, the full value, he's going to have to give 50 shkalim. On the other hand, the Mishnah tells us that if he says, I'm going to give half of my Erech, chetzi Erech alai, he just has to give half of his Erech, no sin chetzi Erech, he gives half of it, he's going to give 25 shkalim. On the other hand, if his language is as follows, Erech chetzi alai, it's not, as we said before, chetzi Erech alai, which is half of my Erech, but here he's saying Erech chetzi alai is the Erech of half of myself, as we saw in the prior Mishnah. If somebody says, I'm going to give the Erech of an organ, and that organ is a davar shanashama tluyabo, that his whole life is dependent on it, he's going to have to give the full fee. So to here, you can't live with half of yourself. You are dependent on half of yourself. Of the other half, you're dependent on it for your life. Accordingly, when somebody says, I'm going to give half of myself, or the Erech of half of myself, the Mishnah tells us, no sen Erech kulan, he's going to have to give the full Erech value, the full 50 shkalim. And in fact, here we're going to have a parallel to Damim. That was all in the context of when somebody says, I'm going to give my Erech. How about if he says this basically the same language, but not Erech, but Damim, actual value. So the Mishnah says, Chetzi Damai Alai, I'm going to give half of my actual value. You can do that. Nosen Chetzi Damam, he's going to have to give half of his actual value. So they would appraise him, how much would he be worth on the slave market, and he has to give half of that appraised value. How about if he says, Demei Chetzi Alai, it's not the same language, we just said before, Chetzi Damai Alai, which is half of my appraised value, but here he's saying the value of half of myself, the mechetzi alai, so that's the value of half of myself as opposed to half of my value. So in this situation, nos and deme kulo, you can actually have to pay the full amount. Why would that be? So in this instance, we would have thought to say otherwise, but there's a pasuk, it's a limud from a pasuk that learns damim from erech. Just like when it comes to erech, when you are talking about something that you cannot live without, so you're going to have to pay the full Erech amount. So too, when it comes to Damim, if you are talking about half of yourself, that's something that you cannot live without. So accordingly, you're going to have to give the full Damim value, and that's what the Mishnah says. There's actually a girsa that we'll read correctly. Zeha klal davar neshama tluyabo, when it comes to Damim, as we're talking about right now, if you make a commitment to give the value of something that your life is dependent on, no, and this is where the change in the gear said, Demei Kulo, you have to give the entire value, not half of the value or whatever other denomination that you give, because when it applies both to Erechin and to Damim, if you're talking about something that is a Davar Shanashama Tluyabo, if your life is dependent on it, you have to give the full amount. Mishnah Hay continues the concept of somebody A is donating the value of an object, which is B, and something happens to that object In the prior Mishnah, what happened was the bee was a person and that person passed away. In our Mishnah, Mishnah Hey, the object here, the bee, is going to be either an animal or some other object that's not a human. And we're going to talk about what happens. And here we're going to see a distinction between the Reisha and the Seifa. And what is critical in the distinction between them is the language of the commitment that the person makes. So Mishnah Hey starts as follows. Shor zeh ola. If somebody says, this ox of mine, I am committing it to be an ola, korban ola. Or he says as follows, bayit sheh korban. He says, this house is going to be literally a korban, a sacrifice, but he means I'm donating it, donating its value to the base of Mikdash. So here, if we look at the language, he's saying about a specific item, this. It says, shor zeh ola, or bayit zeh korban. It's going to be this specific ox. It's going to be this specific house. So accordingly, if something happened to the object, to the bee of that neder, then the person is going to be off the hook. So meis hashor v'nafal abayis. If either the shor, that ox, dies or that house falls, eino chayav l'shalom, he does not have to pay. Why? Because he's not making a commitment on himself. He's not saying, I'm going to give a value to the base of Mikdash, I'm going to give a certain amount to the base of Mikdash. He's saying, I'm going to give the value of that animal. I'm going to give the value of that house. If the house is no longer, if the animal dies in that situation, then he doesn't have to pay anything. However, that contrasts with the Seifa when he adds different language. He says, Demei Shor Zet Alai Ola. So he's adding two words, Demei. There are actually a number of girsas on that, but we'll just go with this one. The Gemara discusses in depth what's the proper girsa. Here he says, Demei, the value of this shore, of this ox, alai, is going to be on me, ola. Or he says alternatively, as those two words, Demei and alai, or Demei, by ze alai korban, the value of this house is upon me, a korban. So in that situation, mesa shor v'nafal abayis, even if that ox dies or if that house falls, it gets destroyed, still chayiv l'shalom, he has to pay because he is taking on a financial obligation on himself that is not limited to that specific ox, or limited to that specific house. And even if something happens to that house or that ox, he is still personally responsible. He is liable to pay the value to the Bet HaKabayis, which is the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishnah Vav talks about the timing. If somebody makes a commitment to give Erechin, how quickly does he have to pay? And if he's not paying up, how can we force him to pay? And while we're talking about Erechin, we're going to talk about other types of korbanos as well. So on a high level, when somebody says he's going to pay something to the Beis HaMikdash, he has an obligation to pay it before the upcoming Chag. So if it's before Pesach, then he has to bring it by Pesach. If it's between Pesach and Shavuos, he has to bring it by Shavuos. And if it's after Shavuos, but before Sukkot, he has to bring it by Sukkot. If he doesn't do that, he violates an Aseh, a positive commandment to fulfill his commitment to pay to the Beis HaMikdash. However, if he lets three Chagim pass by, then he is violating a lav, a negative precept in the Torah. So the Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, has the option when he knows somebody has made a commitment, in order to enforce that that commitment will pay, the Gizbar can take what we call a mashkon, can go in and take a collateral in the value of the commitment of that individual, of that A that made that, we'll talk about Erechin, or some other commitment. The Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, can go and take a security interest, can take collateral until the person pays off the amount owed to the Beis HaMikdash. So here, we'll start talking about Erechin, and then we'll branch off into other areas. The Mishnah says as follows, Chayave Erechin, anyone who is obligated to pay the Erechin, to give the Erech of somebody else, as we've been talking about in this Masechta, Memashkinino, so the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, when the treasurer so desires, he can take a mashkon, he can take collateral from that person, and when that person actually pays the erech that he committed to, for example, the 50 shkalim, if he made the erech commitment on a man between 20 and 60 years old, it's going to be 50 shkalim, as soon as he pays that, then the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash will return that collateral. Chayave chataos v'asham, somebody who's obligated to bring a korban chatas or a korban asham, those are for sins that they have committed. Ein memashkinosan. Here, the gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, doesn't take a mashkon. And the bartender explains as follows, that because a chatas and an asham are brought as a kapara, somebody did a sin, they want to get repentance, they want to wipe off that sin. Accordingly, people aren't going to dilly-dally, they're not going to delay in bringing those types of karbonos because they want a kapara, and accordingly, there's no need for the gizbar of the Beis HaMikdash, the treasure of the Beis HaMikdash, to take a mashkon, to take a collateral from them in order to force payment, to force the bringing of the chatas and the asham. On the other hand, chayave olos ushlamim, if somebody is obligated to bring a korban ola or a korban shlamim, these are brought as donations. They are not kapara. They're not bringing forgiveness for a sin. Accordingly, somebody could easily, unfortunately, make a commitment to bring a donation and he can drag his feet and not do it. So we need to enforce it. Accordingly, the Gizbar has the option to take a mashkon in order to force the bringing of the korban. Now, the Mishnah continues and says as follows, a more global statement. It could be applied to the Ola and Shlamim. It could apply to other korbanos as well. Afal pi she'ein mischaper lo ad she'yisratzeh. When somebody has to bring a korban, you don't have a kapara from it until he actually is mitratzeh for it, which means until he brings it willingly. He has to bring it of his own will. He can't be forced. So even, and this is actually talking about a korban ola in that pasuk, ola and shlamim would apply, because here we just said that we force him to bring the ola and the shlamim, so we take a mashkon. So even though you have to bring it volitionally, but if we force him to bring it, so maybe he's not mitratza, maybe he's not fulfilling the obligation to bring it willingly, maybe he's not fulfilling the mitzvah bringing of those korbanos. So korfin oso achi amarotzon, even though we're forcing him, even though we may be taking a mashkon, and we are forcing him, what we require is that he says rotzani. As long as he says, and this is the Bartanura, we'll see it inside, hecha de beistin mamashkin in the soul, tzarek shiomer rotzani. According to the Bartanura, when the beistin is taking a mashkin, for example, for the ola and the shlamim, he would be forced, we're forcing him to bring those korbanos, so he has to say rotzani. In order for it to be lirtzono, volitional, he has to say the words, I am doing this volitionally, even though he's being forced. But when he says it, we say that a Jew really wants to do mitzvahs. And we see a similar and more famous concept by V'chein Ata Omer B'Gitei Nashim. The same thing applies when it comes to forcing a get. A get has to be lirtzono. You can't force somebody to give a get. Nonetheless, there are times that the halacha does mandate that we can force the individual, a beis din can force the individual, kofin also, but it's only going to be a valid get, ad shiomar rotzani. We can force him until he says rotzani, meaning we have to hear that, we need him to say, I am willingly giving this gift, and accordingly, it will be a valid, not a gift, of get. And accordingly, at that point, it's interesting, the same thing may apply to gifts. A forced gift isn't a gift, that should be given willfully, volitionally as well, but here we're talking about a get. The get has to be given willfully, so he has to say the words rotzani, even though the beis din is forcing him to give that get.